Based on our packet this morning is Lloyd, excuse me, Reynolds versus Division of Engineers, lots of other parties. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Please, ready to proceed.
Thanks. Let me just mention a few minor ground rules. Each side has a half hour. The appellants will have to keep track of their time. And when you start your argument, please state your name and exactly who you represent for the record. Thank you very much. We're ready to proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Eric Schweitzer of Lester, Sigmund, Rooney, and Schweitzer in Alamosa, Colorado. I represent the plaintiffs and appellants Reynolds, Reeds, and Martin. My clients, the Reeds, are up in the audience listening to this argument. As noted in my opening brief, also joining in on the briefing is the current owner of the River Ranch. And so in representing Reynolds, Reeds, and Martins, and having the River Ranch join in on the briefing, this is representing essentially all three of the major parties, major players in the underlying case that is claimed to form preclusion in this case, the Jaws 2 case. My plan this morning is to reserve approximately 10 minutes for rebuttal. With me at council table is Steve Atencio, who represents the Alamosa-La Jara Water Conservancy District. He may share some of that rebuttal time. I may take all of that rebuttal time. We'll see how that plays out. I'll start with an examination of what brings this case before you and before the courts in general. And that is a change in the method of administration of the water rights on Lower La Jara Creek that took place in 2006. The Water Commissioner and Division Engineer in 2006, for the first time, shut down my client's ditches from diverting what they termed native water. So first, I need a little bit of background on that. The Reynoldses, the Reeds, and Martin own very junior water rights on Lower La Jara Creek. They were decreed in 1957. They have appropriation dates variously dating back to the 1890s up until 1947 is the most recent appropriation date on the Reynolds ditch. The decrees were for those ditches were entered in 1960. Those decrees state specifically with respect to what the source of water for those ditches is, that the said ditches derive their supply of water from La Jara Creek, a tributary of the Rio Grande River, which supply is augmented by accretions from drainage, seepage, and return waters flowing into said La Jara Creek, and particularly all water from the drainage ditch of the San Luis Valley Drainage District Number 1, tributary to said La Jara Creek. In the decreto portion of those decrees, and this is the case for all of these ditches, they all say that. In the decreto portion of the decrees state, wherefore it is ordered, adjudged, and decreed that there shall be permitted to flow into said ditches from La Jara Creek and its augmented accretions from drainage, seepage, and return waters flowing into said creek from the drain ditch, on and on and on. Now, interestingly, that's the language in those decrees with respect to what Judge Ogburn in W3894 in 1982, the Jaws 2 case, what Judge Ogburn called the drain ditches as described in the 1952 stipulation and adjudication. There is another drain ditch as described in that 1982 stipulation and adjudication. If you look on Appendix 1 to my opening brief, there's a reproduction of the straight line diagram of the ditch system on the Lower La Jara Creek. It flows, the creek, if you turn it upright, flows from left to right, and the L.E. Shawcroft irrigation ditch says something else. My eyes are too bad to read it, but the L.E. Shawcroft ditch is one of the ditches that was decreed in that 19 19- 1960 or 1957 adjudication date, 1960 decree. It diverts above the San Luis Valley drain. So if you look at the 1960 decree, the language for the L.E. Shawcroft and Sons ditch does not say that the source is Lajera Creek and all of its accretions. It says the source is Lajera Creek and stops there. So that's the one difference out of those ditches, and for obvious reasons, it doesn't divert any drain water because the drain comes in below the head gate of the ditch. So even though the Reynolds and the Reeds and the Martins ditches are very junior ditches, through a prior 1952 subordination stipulation, which was made a decree of the court, they are treated as senior to the River Ranch's water rights downstream, only with respect to drain water. The 1952 stipulation was the subject matter of the Jaws 2 case. That is, again, the preclusion case here. The 1952 stipulation was a trade-off. The River Ranch ditches, the more senior ditches, were diverting out of the stream as opposed to in their decreed location out in the swamps in return for the more junior upstream ditches not opposing the senior ditches moving their head gates to the stream itself out of the swamps. The more senior ditches said, fine, let us do that. We'll let you do two things. We'll let you take water rights that you have in another ditch, the lower Lajera ditch, at alternate points of diversion, and we will subordinate our senior water rights to your junior water rights with respect to water that is attributable to the drain. For that reason, that 1952 stipulation requires the installation of measuring and recording devices on the drain to be able to tell how much water is entering the creek from the drain. That's the only way to make that stipulation work. You have to be able to know what water that these junior downstream ditches on the stream are going to be claiming as their senior priorities coming in from the drain. So, drought year, 1977, River Ranch doesn't get any water. River Ranch argues, hey, you know, we have three senior water rights, and the Cardington ditch, at least, one of our senior water rights, isn't specified as being subject to the subordination stipulation. So we think that we are senior to these more junior water rights with respect at least to the Cottington ditch, because it wasn't specifically named in 1952. They also made the argument that the subsequent 1960 decree, which decreed those junior ditches, they were not decreed when the 52 stipulation took place. Those ditches were undecreed points of diversion that had been in place, again, variously from before the turn of the century. The 1960 decree, according to River Ranch, wiped out the stipulation because the language of the 1960 decree said nothing about this decree is designed to standard language, is designed to disturb the settled appropriation dates already decreed by this court. River Ranch said, hey, the Cottington's free because it wasn't mentioned. All of our ditches are really free because 1960 wiped out the 1952 stipulation. This led to the Jaws 2 litigation. The Jaws 2 litigation involved two main points, and I cite them in the brief. Judge Ogburn specifically laid them out in paragraphs 16 and 17 of his ruling. One point was the one that we just discussed. And the second was a dispute between Reynolds's and Reed's as the primary parties about whether or not their junior water rights were to be administered under some sort of vague undefined sharing agreement or whether they were to be administered strictly in priority, because if administered strictly in priority, Reed's were senior and they got the bulk of that water, especially in drought years. So those were the two issues specifically identified by Judge Ogburn as the primary issues in the case. Well, what changed from 1952 to 1982 when the decree in W3894 entered? Nothing. Nothing changed. And in fact, Judge Ogburn specifically ruled with respect to the Cottington ditch that the testimony and the evidence made clear that the Coddington ditch had always been treated as a junior ditch. When you look at the diversion records of the Coddington ditch, they were big when it was a big water year. They were small to non-existent when it was a small water year or a drought year like 1977. They came and went with respect to the water availability. Whereas when he looked at the diversion records relating to the Reed ditches, the most senior of those 1957 junior ditches, those were fairly constant. So even in dry years, those Reed ditches were getting their water. They were getting it out of the drain. They were treated as senior to the other downstream water rights diverting below the drain, and were able to get that water on a regular basis. So nothing changed. That's the way it had been from, according to Judge Ogburn, the records he looked at from 1910 forward. Nothing changed between 1952 and 1982. Nothing changed after 1982. Nothing. The state would have you believe that the 1982 decree determined that water rights being diverted by the junior ditches were only diverting drain water, weren't diverting any native water. There was no change in administration. Affidavits submitted on the motion for summary judgment in this case by the Reeds, the Reynolds, and the Martins established that they had always diverted native water when it was in priority, when they were able to take it. Nothing changed.
When would that be? I just didn't get any facts on that. They're obviously very junior. It's an over-appropriated stream system. When, if any, is there to take out the drain water, the native water available to the Reynolds right?
There is. It very much depends on the year, but generally it's available early in the year with big spring flows coming down, or when the only senior water rights below them, which are the River Ranch, are satisfied not taking water for whatever reason. River Ranch can always call them out, usually does. So there are very few times when there is native water available. In fact, another one of the holdings that Judge Ogburn made with respect specifically to the, I think it was the L.E. Shawcroft ditch, was, I'm not sure which ditch it was. Anyway, one of the findings was the primary source of water for this ditch is the drain.
Which is water brought in from elsewhere, right, by the drain, brought into Lahara Creek.
From the drainage of Lahara Creek, collected from seepage water, wastewater overflow, and the drain then running into Lahara Creek, yes. Right. That's the primary source of water for the ditch. There, the other not very frequent, not very common source of water is water whenever it's available in priority for those junior ditches. And that's what they were taking when they were shut down in 2006. The River Ranch was not calling for water, or it was satisfied with enough water, and the junior ditches were able to take that water up until the time when the water commissioner shut the headgate. So not very often, does happen early in the year usually, or maybe the River Ranch is haying. There are, when you look at the diversion records, indications of native water being taken, and there was some discussion in the briefing about that. Does that really mean native water? But they're consistent with also infrequent times taking native water. So this is not an attempt to somehow jump up junior water rights in priority. This is dealing with very infrequent small periods of time and infrequent small periods of water when that water is available. And that practice note of taking water in the stream that they're entitled to in priority, whether it's ditch or drain water because they're senior due to the subordination agreement, or whether it's taking native water that they happen to be in priority for with their very junior priority, that's consistent with the decrees themselves. Now, it was very surprising to my clients in 2006 to find that the state had taken the position that this 1982 decree says that, or determined somehow, that they could only divert drain water. You would think that if in 1982, in W3894, the water judge was altering 30 years of administration between 1952 and 1982, that a determination doing that would be explicit.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Suizo.
Suizo, okay. Mr. Suizo, I guess what I'd like to know is how to think about this case in terms of the legal standard of review for us. And I'm just taking a summary paragraph out of Judge Keenhold's 55, where he basically says and goes into detail about his analysis of the pleadings and his analysis of the evidence that was presented in W3894 or JAWS 2. And he makes numerous findings. So what is our responsibility? Do we review his findings de novo, in your opinion, or do we, as we would in a normal water case, treat them as factual findings, which we have to give an enormous amount of deference to, or is there something in between? I think, to me at least, that's the fundamental question we have to reach here first, is what prism do we look at with respect to the judge's orders?
Well, I believe that
I don't want to be disrespectful, but your client's fact that they were disappointed or surprised is not part of our review. Our review should be consistent with legal principles. And so I need some help here. And how are we supposed to look at this fairly substantial and lengthy decree? Dealing, I guess you agree that the elements of issue preclusion are there's no argument with about that. It's a question of application.
That's right. There's no dispute about what the elements of issue preclusion are, and I don't think there's any dispute about the standard of review. I believe it's de novo. You're reviewing a summary judgment entered by the trial judge, the water judge, and you are reviewing that on a de novo basis. I cited Brodeur in my brief. I don't remember the case that the state cited, but the state agreed that the standard of review is de novo for a summary judgment review.
With respect to his specific findings concerning, was the evidence contested? If he granted summary judgment, it seems to me the evidence wasn't contested.
No, the evidence consisted solely of matters in the record, placed in the record by the parties on their summary judgment, cross motions for summary judgment. So there was the record of 3894. There were the affidavits of my clients and of the division engineer. And there was the 1952 decree itself and stipulation. There wasn't much else from those, from that proceeding. So that's what it consisted of. And
didn't it also consist of the actual testimony? Didn't he say, as I recall, he said, I reviewed some of the actual testimony, the record?
There were scattered pieces of testimony in the record. It was far from a complete record.
Right.
He reviewed some of that testimony. He reviewed, I think, also some deposition testimony that it was unclear how got in the record, but was there. And in the briefing, I went through every point that he cited in that record. And frankly, it just does not support the position that W3894 was considering the question of whether or not these ditches could divert native water. Every point that he cited doesn't depend upon whether or not the ditches could divert native water. And I think there we get to the question that this court recently addressed in the Burlington Ditch case. What does it take to get to issue preclusion when you've got things that may or may not have been determined, but that are not determinative of the issue before the court?
Well, counsel, can I just stop you there? So, I guess your contention is that the earlier case did not decide the issue of native water because that just was not an issue at that point. Is that your position?
And nothing that Judge Keenhold cited indicates that it was an issue.
Well, I guess I thought you were perhaps making a different point in terms of what we should look at. I mean, where you were stopped essentially was if something as important as the use of native water had actually been litigated, surely somebody would have said it.
That's right.
Somewhere.
Somebody would have said that. The judge would have said that because the decrees on their face indicate, and I mean the 1960 decrees, indicate that native water was one of the sources of water. So if in 19...
How does the decree, say that, or does it simply locate the point of diversion as being within the bed of the creek or on the bank?
No, it says the said ditches derive their supply from Lajara Creek, a tributary of the Rio Grande River, which supply is augmented by accretions from drainage, etc. And then it says, wherefore it is ordered that there shall be permitted to flow into said ditches from Lajara Creek and its augmented accretions from drainage, blah, 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 water. So
there's
another way to read that.
I've been a little bit confused about the quantification of the amounts that you say are decreed under the 1960 decree. Is it your point of view then that whatever amounts are decreed to read one and two are cumulative? It's Lajara plus the drain water is what's decreed in the 1960 decree? I'm trying to understand the amounts that you're claiming or how there would be some sort of differentiation between the drain water amounts and the native water amounts.
I don't think there is a differentiation.
Okay. You're just saying it's a collective sum that's decreed, and it's the sources are collectively Lajara plus the drain.
Correct.
Okay.
Plus whatever other seepage might accrue to the creek outside of the drain, because it is in an area that collects seepage water.
So thank you.
The 1960 decree doesn't specify they are limited by a total cumulative CFS limitation, whether that comes from drain or native flow. And the only reason to make the distinction is because of that 1952 subordination agreement. That's the only reason that you've got to separately account for what comes in by way of the drain and what comes in by other methods. Otherwise, it's all tributary water to the stream. And the River Ranch senior water rights would just call out anybody junior to them. So the only reason for making the distinction at all is the 1952 stipulation.
I ask one question just again with regard to sort of methodology here, or whether there's any disagreements about the standards. Quite apart from what was done in this case and what you're going to argue, when you talk about somebody would have surely mentioned native water had that been at issue, you're not disputing, though, the notion that something could be necessarily implied in an issue that's determined, are you?
No, I'm not. I think that's what the Schmidt v. Frankowitz case holds. I think that you can have a implied determination. If it's necessary to a holding of the case, it's an implied determination. I don't dispute that. I think that's true. I don't think, though, that if you look at 3894 and its holdings, that there's anything that requires that there was some decision that the drain ditches, so-called, were limited to native water.
And so when you say somebody would have mentioned it or somebody would have said it, you're not saying even the decision maker would have had to have that in mind if that was necessarily implied in what he did decide. Is that right?
I'm not saying from a legal standpoint that he had to have done that. I'm saying it's very surprising. You'd have to really think hard about why the decision maker would quote the 1960 decrees, specifically as to what the source of water is, and not say something like, but they're really limited only to drain water. Judge Ogren specifically quoted that section that I read to you on what the source of water is. Says this is their source of water. Leaves it there. So that's surprising. So if you're going to find, or if Judge Keenhold is going to find, that the issue was necessarily determined, even though not specifically addressed, we need to see what it is in the decree that makes that necessary. And there's been a complete paucity of analysis on that, both by Judge Keenhold and by the state in its briefing. The closest argument that I can recall is Judge Keenhold repeatedly in his ruling says Judge Albert had to have considered all of the sources of water of all of the parties involved before coming to his conclusion. Okay. What did he determine after considering that? Ogbrun's ruling doesn't say anything, and Ogbrun's holding doesn't require anything with respect to the native water issue. Now, that gets brought down to, I think, paragraph 36 of the JAWS 2 decision, which is the paragraph that deals with diversion limits being placed on the reed ditches. And in paragraph 36, Judge Ogburn goes through an analysis of what the reed ditches have diverted. Take that with the grain of salt contained in paragraph 35, as I argued in the brief. Paragraph 35 says, I'm only setting this stuff out to the extent necessary to understand what's going on here. This isn't a complete factual.
So what about his, Judge Keno's discussion of paragraph 7 of the decree itself, the JAWS 2 decree? In his paragraph 66, seems to me that indicates pretty clear analysis of the entire system.
I would have to look at his paragraph 66.
He refers to paragraph 7.
Paragraph 7?
Of the decree itself, not on page 41 of the JAWS 2.
Right, and it says, well, I'm sorry, the decree itself. Right. Paragraph 7 is the distillation of that limitation analysis contained in paragraph 36. So paragraph 36 sets forth what the water right or what the use historically of the drain ditch water for reed was. And that gets distilled then in paragraph 7 of the decretal order. But you don't need to have the determination that there's no native water available to get to those numbers. Because what Judge Osborne did in paragraph 36, which results in paragraph 7, was to look at diversion records of the drain and say, okay, on average, the drain diverts 1,033 CFS, and the maximum, I'm sorry, acre feet, and the maximum it ever diverted was 1,500 acre feet. And therefore, he knows how much, that's 36 through 39. So I'm looking at 39 when I said that. He also knows how much water is typically diverted through the Empire Canal and the Lowland Ditch. And in paragraph 37, he figured out, or he took the analysis of the engineers as to what the irrigation requirements of the historically irrigated reed acreage that everybody could look at from aerial photos and agree, yeah, that's the acreage that's been irrigated. He took into account, well, what's the irrigation requirement? And he said, okay, the irrigation requirement is 4,253 acre feet per year. Of that, we know 1,033 comes from the drain, 1,277 comes from the Empire Canal, 150 comes from the Lowland Canal. So the balance, 1,793, which I worked out as 42%, I think, of the total irrigation requirement, comes from the catch-all. The catch-all is a fell reed well and sub-irrigation.
How'd you get that? Where's that said?
Was what said?
You just made those calculations. What? It's not in the decree, is it?
No. What's in the decree is he assumes an irrigation efficiency of 60%.
Right.
He assumes a water requirement for the irrigated acreage, which he determines what it is. He then he indicates that he's got measured amounts from the drain, the Empire Canal, and the lowland. And the math comes out with 1793. He doesn't indicate that those are measured or that there's any, you can't measure sub-irrigation. So he's saying, all right, the crop requirements are satisfied to the tune of 1793 by this other source. And then I just took 1793 over 4253 and I came up with, well, that's 42% of the total irrigation requirements he's thrown into something that we can't measure. And they're not measuring the native water either. And everybody agrees, it's not much. The testimony that Judge Keenholm quoted with respect to the native water from one of the reads was, in fact, John McClure was asking the question. You read have the ability to divert native water as well, don't you? Answer, yeah, when it's in priority, which isn't very often. So it's part of that catch-all. I would like to reserve my remaining 1:40, if I could, for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Autumn Bernhardt, and I represent the State and Division Engineers. I'll be reserving 5 minutes of my time for Clyde Fotz, the attorney for the individual ditch appellees in this case. This case should not be remanded for consideration of appellant's motion for summary judgment. The water court correctly ruled that appellants are limited to drain water and that the Jaws 2 decree precludes them from taking or claiming native water. If appellants are allowed to take native water, they'll be expanding their use to the detriment of other vested water rights. There are only a few issues subject to appeal.
Now, there are juniors on Lahara Creek, is that right?
Excuse me?
There are juniors on Lahara Creek that are entitled to divert who would be preempted. I didn't quite understand what you said. It seemed to me that the original decree, as counsel recited, definitely is talking about waters that are in Lahara Creek. It doesn't say only drain waters. So whatever they're in priority for, normally that decree would allow them to take, would it not?
They need a declaratory action asking to take whatever waters in Lahara Creek, irrespective of whether it's considered native water. There are actually three main sources of water in Lahara Creek. There's native water, there's imported water, and there's drain water.
Who made the declaratory judgment action?
Mr. Schuiso.
In this case.
Right. That was his request for relief, to take all waters irrespective of whether they're considered.
And that was a new request? That's not been a request made before?
There are certain elements that are overlapping with this case and with JAWS 2. In JAWS 2 is also a declaratory action to resolve the priorities of Lahara Creek, the relative priorities, the sources of water, and to really clarify and determine what the administrative duties of the engineers were. So we think that that issue's already been resolved. They're limited to drain water and imported water. They're not allowed to take native water.
Okay, where is that restriction in the documents?
In the JAWS 2 decree?
Right.
If you look at the judgment and decree sections, page 41, 42, and 43, there's quite a few affirmative duties that are imposed upon the engineers. The one is to go ahead and install measuring devices on all the sources of water. Right now, the drain water is measured coming into Lahara Creek. Imported water from Empire, Lowland, as well as the Richfield Canal is measured going in.
I'm sorry, could you just give me the paragraph numbers again?
Oh, sure. It's just the judgment and decree.
What about the JAWS 2 decree, right?
If you look at paragraph 8, but really all the judgment and decree imposes certain duties upon the engineers. One duty is to actually protect their rights to drain water. That's paragraph 2 on page 40. It requires the engineers to protect their ability to divert drain water.
Sorry, yeah, actually.
Sure, no problem. The JAWS 2 decree also imposes upon the engineers the duty to limit them to annual as well as 10-year average diversions of native water and acreage diversions of
Where's that?
That is paragraph 6, and it's also referenced in Judge Keenhold's order. And we do impose that upon them.
Okay.
They're required to meet those limits. And I mentioned this before, but paragraph 8 requires us to measure all the water that's diverted and to record contemporaneously if that water is drain water, native water, or imported water. We have duties to distinguish between these different colors of water.
And that wouldn't be there in the ordinary decree. It would be whatever source of supply ended up in the creek. So you're saying these provisions are kind of unique to a decree, this measurement, the identification of the waters. If all these waters were commingled, as your opposing counsel says, you wouldn't have such provisions.
That's true. Everything's measured in and measured out.
Right.
People have certain sources of water and not other sources of water on this creek. And really, before the JAWS 2 decree, the administration wasn't as stringent as that. A lot of the people, paragraph 7 of the 1950 decree, for example, imposes a duty upon appellants, well, their successors in interest or the predecessors in interest, to install measuring devices so people could record how much drain water they're taking. they didn't follow through with that, and that was part of the reason that Johns 2 was brought. This issue of who is entitled to native, drain, and imported water, especially native and drain water, was an issue that was already resolved, and that's why we...
So this declaratory judgment action, which is before Judge Kingold, he just decides, well, this has already been litigated,
it's already
dismissed.
Yes, he granted our motion for summary judgment on the basis of collateral estoppel. And in this case, there are very few issues that are up for appeal because appellants have already conceded the second and third elements of collateral estoppel. So the only issues here are whether the source of water was actually litigated, necessarily determined, whether appellants had a full and fair opportunity to litigate the sources of water, and also whether and to what extent Judge Kingold was required to consider the diversion records that were attached to their motion for summary judgment. So remanding this case and allowing appellants to potentially relitigate their water sources would be a waste of judicial resources, would be burdensome to the parties that already participated in JAWS 2, and would potentially make us subject to inconsistent administrative duties on Lahara Creek. We administer appellants' water rights as drain water rights. They're not entitled to take native water. If they take native water, they'll be expanding their use because they're limited to drain water.
How would they be expanding their use?
Sure. Well, there's two kinds of native water. There's decreed native water, and there's also water that is in Lahara Creek that's in excess of decreed water rights. So the decreed native water has already been decreed. It's fully appropriated. There's also water in Lahara Creek, and once all decreed water rights are met on Lahara Creek, that water is considered native non-normal flows under the Alamosa-Lahara v. Gould opinion, and that's subject to the compact. They can't take those waters either. They can't have a decreed right to those. That water is supposed to go from Lahara Creek, flow into the Rio Grande.
So that's bypassed for the compact, basically?
Yes.
Okay, and they would be intercepting that water? Is that part of your concern, part of the state's concern?
Yes, that's actually why we filed our motion for determination of question of law earlier in this case. We wanted to make a legal determination that the non-normal flows of Lahara Creek, including the return flows and flood flows, were subject to the Rio Grande Compact.
Because that has ramifications on others in the entire basin if that water isn't part of the compact delivery, is that
definitely,
right?
Definitely, definitely. If appellants take the compact water, what will happen is Alamosa-Lahara v. Gould prevents the state engineers from curtailing on the Rio Grande tributaries, Trinchera, Alamosa, and Lahara. So if we were in trouble with the compact, we'd have to curtail on the Rio Grande. So their expansion of use of water will actually hurt people on the Rio Grande as well. So,
Council, I'd like to take a couple of steps back. Looking at the paragraphs in the JAWS 2 order that you referred us to, paragraph 7 and 8, particularly paragraph 7, it speaks to defendants' reach shall not exceed their historical use so that the decreed reed ditches shall not divert more drain water. And it seems to me, taking this even yet one more step back, in 1952 decree was really focused on establishing authorities for drain water only. And the 1960 decrees, likewise, were really talking about drain water alone. And certainly the quote from the 1960 decree refers to multiple sources of that water, Lahara Creek, as augmented by drain water and other accretions. But really, it seems to me what was at stake in JAWS 2 was proper administration of that drain water. Simply, to the extent native water might have been part of the Reed's decree, it simply was not an issue in the 1960, in JAWS 2. My question is, it seems to me that by referring to the engineer's duties and so forth as set out in JAWS 2, it simply begs the question. Yes, you were asked to administer drain water, but that still doesn't get us to answering the plaintiff's question, which is that doesn't really address the native water rights that they claim exist under the 1960 decree.
I understand what you're saying, but I disagree with the conclusion that you're reaching. I did think that JAWS 2 determined rights to native water. I mentioned this before, but the engineer specifically brought the JAWS 2 action as a declaratory judgment action and allowed all the defendants to interplead their various water rights on there and to resolve our administrative duties. If you look at the claims that were actually brought in that action, there were claims by River Ranch against the Reeds for drain water out of priority diversion of drain water. But there was also claims by the Reeds against the Reynolds for out of priority diversions of native and drain water. There wasn't really a way for them to distinguish what was and what wasn't. But if you look at the pleadings, the Reeds particularly emphasize that they had water rights beyond native water. The fact that the Jaws 2 case doesn't list native water as a source of water for appellants was by design. Why list native water as a source of appellants' water rights when they don't have it? There was also claims made by the Reynolds against the Reeds for unlawfully consuming, violating a sharing agreement, unlawfully consuming imported and drain water, and saying that the 1960 decree, which adjudicated drain water, was defective. So in order to resolve and sort out all these various issues, all the parties had an incentive to name all their water rights, which they did in the pleadings. Clearly the Reeds claimed water rights beyond the drain water. And to litigate those sources and to question each other's rights to those various sources of water. I mean, in order to determine the administrative duties of the engineers on Lahara Creek, the water court had to hear detailed testimony about historic irrigation practices, what sources of water were being applied when. And so I think, quite frankly, that Jaws 2 did address native water, and it addressed the sources of water for a lot of parties. If you look at paragraph 72 or 75 B and C, I believe it's 18, it talks about how the 1960 decree was an adjudication of drain water, and that no other ditches, including the Coddington, Hanson, and Swamp, had any right to that. Hanson, Swamp, and Coddington are native water ditches. In fact, if you look at the Reeds specifically made an argument against River Ranch saying, no, you can't call us out for water. One, the one basic argument was, Coddington, you have native water. They also argued in the alternative that that the Coddington was subordinated under the 1952 decree. So they argued in the alternative. There's language in the decree talking about the subordination of Coddington water to the plaintiff drain ditches, but the decree also talks about the Swamp, Hanson, and Coddington as being native water ditches. So that issue is in there, and if you scan the decree, the issue, there's references to native water, there's references to imported water, and there's issues to drain water. And all those findings of fact, in addition to the judgment and decree, is where we get our duties to administer different sources and colors of water.
Though these plaintiffs' rights to native water have been junior to Hanson and some of these other native water rights, in other words, they wouldn't have been at stake except as they were pertained to this subordination agreement in 1952, which related only to the ditch water. So in other words, why would it have been relevant if those native water rights would have been junior anyway?
Well, a native water ditch can't call out a drain water ditch. They're two different sources of water. Swamp, Hanson, and Coddington are native water ditches. They can't call out the appellants for water rights because appellants have drain and imported water. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay, thank you. As I mentioned before, Jaws 2 was protracted litigation. There was extensive testimony, extensive motions advocacy, all aimed at resolving this mess of administrative practice on Lower Lahara Ditch. Remanding this case would just defeat the entire purpose of collateral estoppel, which is to prevent the relitigation of issues that have already been determined. The diversion records also do not raise any genuine issues of material fact here. Appellants claim that the administrative practices have changed recently in 2006. That's not true. The engineers have administered appellants' water rights as drain water rights. There have been errors in the diversion records. That's certainly true. That happens any time. But the administrative errors of the engineers do not create or determine water rights. They are limited by the Jaws 2 decree to drain and imported water. If you look at Alamosa Lahara v. Gould, it actually says that the surface flows of all the waters and tributaries in the Rio Grande Basin were fully appropriated by the 1900s. There simply just wasn't any drain or native water left for them to appropriate. There is an outlying case, the L.A. Shawcroft Ditch, which was appropriated in the 1960 decree. That is native water.
Could you explain this? Explain the drain a little bit more. What is the source of the drain water? Is it other creeks, other drainages?
Sure. The drain water actually was constructed in 1919 over a natural depression called the Chapman Slough. Sorry, I lost it for a second. It was a natural depression. And what happened is that folks were irrigating on the canals, and their return flows were running toward Lahara Creek. There was also a lot of seepage and tail water and just plain wastewater that was running toward Lahara Creek. What happened is that it got boggy, it got swampy, and so they created that drain to collect all those return flows off of the canals.
So it's canals water?
It's canals water.
So basically they're draining into Lahara Creek?
Yes, it's capturing all those return flows from canals. It's also capturing some wastewater from some fish hatcheries. That's artesian well water. But and if you look at the 1960 decree, the purpose of that really was to adjudicate and resolve a dispute between the Baileys as well as the Petersons. They had claimed a prior right to divert drain water to these appellants here. The appellants got in and adjudicated their water rights finally because someone was threatening their native water. Prior to their adjudication of drain water, those water rights and those ditches were essentially wildcat ditches that were taking imported water. So if you look at the 1960 decree, was essentially designed to award them and protect their rights to drain water.
The return flows from Canales Creek, basically.
Yes, yes. The Petersons and Baileys argued that they could take directly out of the drain in Peterson v. Reed, and were trying to take that water and say that they were senior to appellants. Peterson v. Reed, the 1960 decree, it just emphasizes that these folks have drain water and that litigation was designed to protect their rights to drain water. They have pointed to no references in the Jaws 2 decree that would even remotely suggest that they're entitled to native water. I'm not aware of any ambiguities in this decree that would suggest that they were entitled to native water.
So can I just bring you back to our standard of review question? Do you agree that this is a de novo review by us, or do we pay some deference to Judge Keenold's conclusions about whether collateral estoppel was shown?
Well, I do concede that it's de novo review, but that doesn't necessarily mean it should be remanded. I mean,
I understand that. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, this is somewhat unusual in that this is a 23-page opinion digging into deposition testimony and pleadings and, you know, I mean, basically, I take this testimony and that means X or something. I mean, that's kind of how the order reads. And I'm wondering, do you think that we should defer or show some deference to those conclusions, or do we look at the record just fresh ourselves to determine whether these issues were actually litigated?
Well, I actually designated additional items for the record. So everything that Judge Keenhold is before this court, the Jaws 1 and 2 plead the entire case files. There are some case files that actually went missing. Hopefully they're still in the custody of the Alamosa courthouse. But everything that Judge Keenhold had to review and to interpret whether collateral estoppel should really apply is before this court right now.
Right, but the question is, should we pay any deference to Judge Keenhold's reading of that material? Should we say, oh gosh, Judge Keenhold read it this way, we're going to defer to that, or do we look at those materials anew and draw our own de novo conclusions?
I think that even if you didn't refer to Judge Keenhold and you took some time to look at the same things that he reviewed, that we would still prevail on our motion for summary judgment. The source of appellant's water rights, as well as the determination of the meaning of the 1952 and 1960 decrees, was raised in the pleadings and testimony, submitted for determination, and actually determined. Based upon the records that are available to the Supreme Court, as well as our briefs, I respectfully request that you uphold Judge Keenhold's order granting summary judgment and deny the request for remand. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fass?
May it please the court. My name is Clyde Fotts. My registration number is 378. It's an amazing number to me, too. I represent the individual defendants in this case, and I think their names are all listed, so I'm not going to go through that. I am only going to try to take 5 minutes or less so that there is some rebuttal time. We generally agree with the state's position. What we have here is the Alamos Aloha Conservation District has filed a brief that basically deals with the Rio Grande Compact. I would like to get that issue out of the way right at the start. Judge Keenhold's order does not deal with the Rio Grande Compact. There is not a word about the Rio Grande Compact in his order. And there has been no notice of appeal filed by the district dealing with the Rio Grande Compact. I understand that the Rio Grande Compact is important to the state and to other states as well, but that is, I do not believe, is before the court in this proceeding. We are here simply to decide whether or not Judge Keenhold properly decided what the JAWS 2 case solved the ambiguities in the 19th.
Well, what's all this scrap about native water that is very rarely available? I mean, normally a decree, when it says a source of supply is a certain creek, it's whatever's in priority, right?
Your Honor, I will say to you that the Gold case exempted from the compact the normal flows out of Guajara, Trinchera, and Alamosa Creeks. It is, in fact, that's what the law is at this point in time. The 60s decree, I think, was ambiguous. I think the 52 stipulation was ambiguous. And frankly, I think that's exactly what 41 days of trial in the JAWS 2 case attempted to solve, and I believe did solve. They said there were definitely, as Ms. Bernard pointed out, different sources of water that go into Lahar Creek, some native water, some imported water, if you will, and some water from the drain. The drain was a sump and, in fact, collected a lot of water at one point in time because there was a lot of runoff and water that flowed through, irrigated, and went into the sump. With the change of irrigation practices to sprinklers, not so much water anymore, and the drain does not carry today very much water. That's the real issue here. There was a deal made between the Reed Reynolds issues folks and the River Ranch about who got the drain water, who got the native water in Lahar Creek, and they made a deal. I think JAWS 2, in fact, interpreted what that deal was, dealt with the language that seemed ambiguous in the 60 decrees, and solved the matter once and for all. Apparently. I think we've had repeated questions about what's the standard of review here. I think it's de novo, but I also think, frankly, that while we recognize it's de novo, the appellants have really given you no cites to the record that are not matters considered by Judge Keenhold when he ruled. Judge Keenhold went back and went through the entire transcript, as he says in his order, for the JAWS 2 case, 41 days worth. My God, that's an amazing number of days. I can't imagine that it didn't exhaust everybody. You know, Judge Keenhold was the only person of the parties who had no horse in the race. I mean, he's impartial. He looked at the record. My clients certainly have a horse in the race. Their clients have a horse in the race. He very carefully went through it. He looked at it. He examined it. And he tried to decide it. I think his decision, frankly, had one great beneficial result. We're not going to have a Jaws 3. We're not going to relitigate these issues again. Remember, two of the four items have been stipulated to on collateral estoppel issue preclusion. And I think that decision was correct. It was certainly thoughtful and certainly entailed a great review of all of the material from the prior cases. I think the other thing that I'd like to point out very quickly is there's been a lot of talk about implication and what have you. Did Judge Kingholt's decision properly reflect the issues that were actually decided in Jaws 2? And was Jaws 2 an implication case? I would just like to point out that the very same issue that's involved in this case was involved with Jaws 2. In their answer in Jaws 2, the Reeds specifically denied the following: that the water rights of the Reed Ditch number 1 and the first enlargement of Reed Ditch number 1 on Lahar Creek are limited to drainage water which empties into Lahar Creek from the drainage ditch of the San Luis Valley Drainage District number 1. Sounds pretty much the same as what we're dealing with here, doesn't it? It's the Reeds were contending that they had water rights above and beyond the ditch right. What do the appellants now say about that particular pleading, which is in Judge Kingholt's ruling? They say, quote, "This is the Reeds' paranoid denial in their answer, an assertion not made." Let me just tell you, I think that was a pretty careful answer by the people that were representing the Reeds at that point in time. They wanted to make sure the issue was resolved that they had rights above and beyond the water from the drainage ditch. The only problem with calling it careful instead of paranoid is that if you call it a careful answer, it hurts the plaintiff's, the appellant's position. But there we have an honest pleading in the Jaws 2 case, which raises the issue directly. No implication, no nothing. Just absolute directly. I think, lastly, the proof of the correctness of Judge Kingholt's decision in this case is the testimony of Orrin Reed, who was this kind of the self-appointed river master in those days. In his testimony in the Jaws 2 case, he said in response to a question, after the stipulation, that's the 1952 stipulation, came into being, like I said before, 1,000 times, we get the drain water and they get the creek water. And I think it's just that simple. Thank you.
Mr. Potts. Mr. Sweetson.
Thank you. Well, Your Honors, I was flipping through my brief to try to find where this exchange in the answer of the Reeds was. It's in the brief. The paranoid quote is correct, because the allegation that the Reeds were answering was, the Reeds and others are owners of surface water rights in Lahara Creek. That was it. And they denied
that they admitted that, and then they denied any non-expressed implication that that was all that they owned. There was no assertion that that was all they owned. That's why I say it's a paranoid denial. It's a lawyer saying the same thing 10 different ways. That was not an issue in the case. Ms. Bernhardt made a statement that she couldn't find anywhere in W3894 an implication that the Reeds indeed did own Native Water. I just went through this last night. I'm going to rattle them off quickly. Paragraphs 1 through 7, introductory paragraphs, describe the rights as diverting from the creek. 7 describes Native and drain and other waters. No mention of a limit that some parties have some and some parties have others. Paragraph 26 quotes, as I said, the source language out of the 1960 decrees. Doesn't say anybody's limited to drain water. Paragraph 30, the sources for the Reynolds Ditch are the same as for the Reed. Again, it's the 1960 decrees. Paragraph 42, paragraph 73A, paragraph 161B, and 164C all imply that the reason that what the court is saying is that the stipulation has made the River Ranch rights junior as to drain water only. That's what the court says a number of times, as to drain water only, junior to the my client's water rights, the lower junior lower water rights. For that reason, I think it's quite clear. I'm happy to continue, but I'm out of time. I think it's quite clear that the judge ruled incorrectly, and we ask that this court remand the matter back for consideration of the motion for summary judgment filed by the plaintiffs.
Thank you, Mr. Sweetser. I want to thank both attorneys, all three attorneys, for your arguments. The case will be submitted on the briefs, and the court will take a recess until 10:30. Thank you.